Boom. We're live. It is myself, Elliot Lane, co-host, writer extraordinaire, best damn journalist in the cannabis industry, Javier Jase himself. We are here to bring you your cannabis executives of the week. We have two amazing ones today. Really, really excited about this one. But that being said, Aaron Thomas, get us kicked off. Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Again, Elliot Lane, Javier Jase here. We have two amazing guests today. We have the CEOs, respectively, of Custom Cones and Atlas Brands with us. It's going to be two awesome conversations. But Javi, first and foremost, my guy, how you doing?
Doing great. Doing great. What about you?
I'm doing good, man. You know, it was an interesting Cannabis Daily this morning. If y'all don't know, we have a daily podcast, 5 minutes every morning for your daily dose of cannabis news and insights to get your day started off right. You can tell I say that a lot. But all that said, it was a ton of state news this morning, man. We had Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, Indiana, Minnesota, New Jersey, Oregon, wow, and DC, all with cannabis news today.
What? Okay. Can you walk us through some of that? I am in no way equipped to walk.
I'll give you a quick rundown. Oklahoma, the legal market is producing 32 times more weed than necessary. 32 times more weed than necessary. You know where that weed's going after it's not sold legally? To the illicit market. So that's the Oregon news, or the Oklahoma news, unfortunately. Pennsylvania, they're pushing a bill right now through legislature to allow physicians to prescribe medical marijuana for any illness to the doctor's discretion. If that makes its way through, that's awesome. New Hampshire, they're looking to do a state-run sales model for cannabis. That would be kind of unique, right, Javi, if they did a state-run sales model for U.S.?
Yeah, definitely for the U.S. I mean, there's a model like that in a few Canadian provinces. There's a model like that, for instance, in Argentina. But yeah, usually it's in the U.S. The state isn't involved.
Yeah, that would be pretty unique. Minnesota, they're thinking that marijuana sales will reach $1.5 billion, by 2029. New Jersey hit $180 million in legal weed sales so far this year. Ooh. Oregon operators, in order to get their business licenses renewed, now have to create good relationships, good standing with state tax collectors. That's pretty interesting, man. I mean, and then DC, they're trying, the GOP in the U.S. House of Representatives is trying to ban, get this, they link these two things together. Why? I don't know. City traffic cameras in DC. And marijuana sales. So go figure. There's a lot happening out there. And then in Indiana, they're just starting to talk about legal marijuana, which I didn't think was going to happen until 2050. So happy to see that happening. But Javi, good Lord, man, tons happening.
Insane. And you mentioned taxes, and I want to shout out our good friend, Jeremy Burke. We posted an article today out of his newsletter, Cultivate It. Go check it out if you haven't yet. And he looks into why cannabis companies pay so much taxes. And it's a very interesting story about a drug dealer in the 70s. But if you're wondering how much extra tax cannabis companies are paying, there's a report from Whitney Economics, another good friend of Benzinga's. And he says that last year, cannabis businesses paid $1.8 billion in excess taxes. How insane is that?
Wow. Wow. Good Lord, man. Taxes are the... Oh, I feel like that's the dirty word here.
But go check this out after the show on Benzinga.com/cannabis. And another interesting report out of Whitney Economics, who is very strong today. A new report finds that only 24.4% of U.S. cannabis businesses are profitable. So that is less than one in four cannabis businesses are profitable, down from 42% last year. And there is little relief. According to Whitney, he is forecasting 7 quarters of slower than normal growth.
That is, I mean, it's not surprising, but to an extent it is, because you have the theme of the year being operational efficiency, right? You know, you're getting rid of some assets in order to support, you know, not spending more than you're making in other assets. You know, I'm not a CEO of a cannabis company, so I do not know as well as a lot of people. But it is interesting that it's such a steep drop.
Insane, man. It's been a tough year. Let's do a quick fire round.
Do it.
What do we call it? quick fire. And then, so Sundale is lowering its stake in Indiva to 8.57% after selling 3.3 million shares. California cannabis distributor Herbal is going into receivership, basically bankruptcy for cannabis companies. And brands are facing millions in unpaid invoices. Go check that out. I'm in Zynga.com/cannabis. And Zynga exclusive. Floorworks completed a $2.25 million Series A financing led by Bonaventure Equity, including also ArcView Group and a high net worth individual whose name remains undisclosed.
Boo. We don't like undisclosed here in this media organization. All that said, though, I mean, Herbal facilitated $700 million in product sales last year.
How is it going under?
That's my question, man. What the hell happened?
Mismanagement.
You said it. All that said,
to be inclusive, also it could be Mr. Management.
Yeah, I wonder how much they actually brought in, after, the brands got theirs. But I mean, some brands didn't even get theirs. Where'd that money go? I don't know. There's a lot of questions around that one, man. And it's tough. It's tough for a lot of people in California right now because of Herbal in that situation. All that said, Javi, anything else before we jump into people who are just better looking and cooler than us, man? It's unfortunate, but it's true.
Let's bring on our first guest, Mr. Harrison Barr, co-founder of Custom Cones USA.
Let's do it. Mr. Bard, welcome in, sir. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
We're good, man. We're good. We're chilling. We're talking about cannabis. A lot of crap things happening. Maybe some positive sentiment in the near future, my friend. But let's talk about you. What's going on with you? How did you get into cannabis? Talk to us a little bit about your journey into the industry.
So I was just always interested in cannabis. I remember watching Colorado legalize and people celebrating in the streets. I was in high school and I just thought, wow, I'm too young to take advantage of this opportunity, and felt, I was watching the boat sail by. But when I was in college, I realized that wasn't the case, had a couple different cannabis ideas. And when I accepted my first full-time job offer, the requirements for me was to be in a recreational state so I could, expand into that area. So it was always in the back of my mind.
Awesome. And then tell us a little bit about Custom Cones USA. What problem are you solving in the industry?
So we are the only and most specific pre-roll ancillary company in the industry. From start to finish, we could help companies with their manufacturing issues. So anything once the flower is cured, we have solutions in terms of grinding, sifting, getting the right particle size to then fill your pre-rolls. We have machines all the way up from like the tabletop standard knockbox style pre-roll machines all the way up to fully automated solutions. And then we have integration solutions that could take your bud so you don't even touch it once it's cured. And it could grind it, automatically convey it, put it into that automated pre-roll machine and reduce the touch points, the labor points, all of that. And then we have the widest variety of paper products as well. So your standard regular pre-roll cones, but multiple different types of hemp wrap blunt options, botanical options, different shapes and sizes, different filter tips like glass, wood, ceramic, and then the widest variety of ways you can customize all those different options.
I have a couple of questions to follow up on this. One is, are all the machines like machines that you buy, or do you also offer it as a service, like at a very large scale? How does that work?
So us, we don't touch the cannabis product, but there are a bunch of companies that offer, manufacturing as a service. A lot of our bigger customers are co-packers, so they'll buy all these different machines. They are on the cutting edge. They're willing to take the risk and buy a lot of these automated machines before they're really proven out. And so as a smaller business, you could leverage them and go to them and have them manufacture your pre-rolls, and then you don't have to put in that money.
And, who are you competing with, really? Are you competing with the pre-roll companies or the paper companies or both?
So we don't compete with, pre-roll producers. Our biggest competitors are probably, Futurola, the big pre-roll cone manufacturers.
But, And what about, the general paper market? Is the end consumer a big part of your equation right now, or is it mostly B2B?
No, right now we're 100% B2B.
Interesting.
Nice.
I mean, so regular consumers
product. That's what we're hearing right now.
Yeah, no, regular consumers do shop on our website. It's a much more value, you know, are we selling boxes of like 200, 800, 1,000? So compared to going to the store and paying a couple bucks for a 3-pack of cones, some savvy shoppers are just finding our website and really buying in bulk. So Javi, definitely stop by.
I like that, Arison. Nice. So let's talk a little bit about the category, man. You know, when I look at what categories could be on the rise, there's so much talk about beverages, you know, edibles as the entrant into the market, right? Flower is always king. But when it comes to pre-rolls, it's an interesting, I would say, it's a product type you can't ignore. Can you talk to me a little bit about where it stands in the overall, you know, ranking of these different product categories? You know, how important are pre-rolls to the cannabis industry overall? Where do you see pre-rolls going in terms of significance to the consumer?
Yeah, so pre-rolls are typically second or third in any given state or country. Right now in the U.S. overall, they're third behind flower, vapes, and then pre-rolls. But pre-rolls was the fastest growing segment year over year across the U.S. and in Canada. In the U.S., pre-rolls grew at 12% year over year. That was the fastest amongst any categories. Flower was actually shrinking. And in Canada, pre-rolls grew at 38% year over year. So super, super strong growth in Canada. And then we see pre-rolls continuing to rise. Consumers in the U.S. are super, super convenience driven. And as the quality of pre-rolls is increasing, they don't have the concern where, you know, pre-rolls used to be an afterthought. And a lot of pre-roll manufacturers would just put their shake and trim into pre-rolls. So the price of cannabis is coming down, so they're able to put higher quality pre-roll. Pre-roll manufacturers now know that the pre-roll category is a strong category, so they're not putting shake and trim into their high quality pre-rolls. And then with multi-packs and automation, the price is continuing to drop even further, you know, combined with the lower flower cost. So pre-rolls are going to get more and more popular.
Do you have any data on the types of consumers for pre-rolls? Is that something that you all look at? It may not be something that you particularly worry about, but just asking your insights and perspective overall, when it comes to who's buying pre-rolls and what consumer, you know, gravitates toward that product. I'm not sure if you have any information on that.
Yeah, I could pull it up. We actually just released a white paper in collaboration with Headset. And the interesting thing about pre-rolls is it didn't matter the demographic in terms of like baby boomers, Gen Z, millennials. The pre-roll segment remained really consistent amongst all of those, whereas in other ones, different segments would shrink or expand as they aged. So I could try to pull up the information real quick, but we saw the average, you know, doesn't matter what demographic you're in, your pre-roll consumption stayed the same, whereas older crowds tend to buy less and less flower as they got older. Younger crowds bought more and more vapes in terms of like Gen Z. So the interesting thing is like pre-rolls span across all generations and it remains a consistent form factor or consumption method.
I have one more question, and this is for both of you. As somebody who is not, you know, a really uber long time consumer of cannabis, what is the difference between pre-rolls and flowers and flower? Like, I mean, how is, I know the category of pre-roll is it's a pre-roll. Is that the only difference? Is there another reason it's not, you know, considered somewhat unique to flower?
I mean, that's just the only difference. You know, flower has to be ground down and can be consumed in multiple different methods. And the pre-roll is just any.
So it's how the product comes, essentially.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Ready to smoke.
Okay. Yeah. I'm on board. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't missing anything there. Probably a stupid question, but thanks for humoring me.
It's like rolling tobacco versus a pack of cigarettes, basically, right? If you want to get like some kind of analogy, right? It's not the best one, but it kind of works, right? One you get like the tobacco, you have to, you know, roll it yourself, et cetera. The other one is just super convenient. Now, you know, the conception was that, as you said, you know, pre-rolls were something for like the newbie, right? For the person who didn't care about the quality, who wanted convenience, who didn't know how to roll. But what we saw is massive growth, according to your white paper, on like infused and connoisseur pre-rolls. Can you give us a little bit of insight into what those are and why do you think they're gaining so much traction in the market with like 1400% growth in Canada, 22% growth in the US or something like that?
Yeah, so the crazy growth in Canada was because they were illegal before Health Canada is really strict. So they didn't allow manufacturers to create an infused pre-roll. We were working with a lot of Canadian LPs and they were trying to figure out how do we categorize this product? How can we get it accepted and Health Canada. People were even trying to say, this is a concentrate now. It's not even a pre-roll anymore. They were coming up with all sorts of creative ways to get those through Health Canada. But now, since they've legalized that and made it acceptable, that's why you see that huge growth. So that'll like level out over the years. And the main reason that's driving it is the average cannabis consumer, your core recreational connoisseur, is just looking for high THC products. So you hear a lot of people in the industry get really upset saying it's not about high THC, it's all about the terpenes and the quality and all this and that. But unfortunately, your average consumer is just going for highest THC value. They understand that that's probably going to correlate to the biggest effect or help stretch their dollars out the furthest. So when you go to a dispensary and you see a $8 pre-roll, and then you see a $10 infused pre-roll that's measuring at like 40, 50, depending on the company and how honest their testing results are, like 60%, it's a no-brainer for the consumer to gravitate towards the infused pre-rolls. And then they're also flavoring a lot of the infused pre-rolls, and customers, your average consumer loves flavors. So they're putting, you know, flavor terpenes in there, flavors in the distillate that's in the pre-roll. And so people love the flavors and the high potency.
And the other thing that really caught my eye from your report was that a price compression is not really affecting pre-rolls as much as it is affecting other verticals, especially flower. Cool. Can you explain why or how this works and what you're seeing?
Yeah, so we saw that there was price compression amongst every single category. So prices are falling in every market, but pre-rolls had the least amount of price compression. And then we feel this is because you're creating a value when you manufacture a product. So versus raw flower, that's just a commodity that's going to have the biggest decrease in price. But then once you start manufacturing something, you're able to retain some margins there. And then as infused pre-rolls have gotten more popular, that helps increase the margins there. And that's mitigated some of that price compression as well.
Value add. I love that.
That's interesting. Why is everybody not doing pre-rolls? All right. So Harrison,
don't give them ideas. Harrison, know, will right? not be happy.
Hey, it's more business for Harrison. He's not complaining. Yeah. Harrison, let's end here, man. Why don't you tell us a little bit about some of these initiatives that you're offering? You know, I think you're offering some support to some pretty good causes. If you want to go into a little bit about that.
Yeah. So some cool things we do is we don't just offer plain, like regular white filter tip pre-roll cones. We have different options, so companies could add some sort of branding to their pre-roll without going through the longer lead times, the higher prices, and then the larger minimum orders as well. So we have, you know, just plain colored filter tips like red, yellow, green, blue. We have some that are pre-labeled with indica, sativa, and hybrid, so you can create multi-packs on a go. But then we also have special charity initiatives. So we have ones with a rainbow filter tip for LGBTQ plus charities. We have an American flag one where we donate to different veterans cannabis-related charities. And then we also have a breast cancer pink ribbon pre-roll cone. That's the one we've been doing the longest, where we donate to different breast cancer research foundations. And so we donate 10% of all profits from those. And then we encourage the brand who's going to be using those to come up with their own marketing campaign, choose whatever charity they'd like to, and then also try to encourage the dispensary. So through every part of that supply chain and every step of the industry, try to get people involved, spread awareness, and create some sort of charity initiative.
I love that. You're not only doing it for you all, but you're also encouraging others to do it as well. Trickle effect, my friend. But Harrison Bard, co-founder Custom Cones USA. Check him out, customconesusa.com. Harrison, really appreciate your time today, man. Shedding some light on pre-roll. Great data, my friend. We look forward to having you in Chicago, September 27th and 28th with us to talk more on this. Until then, my friend, keep it up. Keep up the good work, and looking forward to hearing more.
Thanks so much. Yeah, can't wait.
Thanks, Harrison. Fun, man. Honestly, it's a product category we should talk about more on here. It really is.
Yeah, man. I'm super into pre-rolls. And I think, you know, we always talk about the convenience that products like beverages offer. But like pre-rolls are like the other big category, right? Edibles are cool, but they're hard to dose. They're not for everyone. It's a little bit weird for adults to be eating gummies or whatever, right? But beverages...
Excuse you. Adults do eat gummies. Gummy bears are heaven on earth. Watch your...
I love them too. And I eat them like very often, like regular gummies, just for fun. But then, I don't know, people like, a lot of people feel
when
like
my wife buys me candy, it's gummy worms. I don't like, what is this? Okay, Javi, we're fighting. You and I are in a fight. But All that said, Javi, it was a great interview, man. We have one more amazing guest with us today. Stick around. We are now going to be talking with Bernie Young, the CEO of Atlas Global Brands. Their ticker is ATL. Bernie, I'm not going to lie, man. When you get me with the ticker ATL, the only thing I can think of is Atlanta's airport, and it gives me some nightmares, man. How are you? Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Of course, of course. So, Bernie, you are leading what seems to be one of the hotter international companies. Can you tell us a little bit about Atlas, what you guys are up to?
Yeah, for sure. So Atlas Global Brands is a global medical cannabis company. We sell both domestically in Canada, but really our focus is international. So we're in Australia, Germany, Israel, and other EU markets. And I think the biggest competitive advantage, like I've been in this space for so long, love the industry and this product, it's we need to continue to provide the greatest product and be a product focused first company for all patient and consumer needs. And that's really where our focus is.
So what are you selling? I understand you have like several brands within the umbrella of Atlas. How does that work? What are the key brands? What are some of the emerging brands that you have?
For sure. So in Canada first, obviously that's where most of our brands are. So we've got Natural History, Electric Lettuce. The big one that we're really launching right now, and I'm sure we'll spend some time to talk about it, is we have an exclusive partnership with Snoop Dogg, and we're relaunching a brand new brand called Dog Pound. And so Dog Pound is, it's got the cryptic blue, which is his blue, the cryptic paisley. Like, you would be surprised how super engaged he is on this. We all know he's synonymous with cannabis. And like, you know, just to give you kind of some flavor, you know, we've got a cryptic chronic flower strain coming out. We're very, very specific on that. And that's really exciting. So that's a really big bet domestically, but same thing internationally, right? Like on the international side, we've got Israel where we own, well, number one, we ship in products into the marketplace. Number two, we have a definitive agreement where we're acquiring a trading house, which is essentially a distributor. So, you know, for those that don't know, I'm from beverage alcohol in my past as well, and know the importance of having great variety and assortment to provide to the marketplace. So that's something we'll have there, as well as a vertically integrated value chain in Israel. And then the third piece as well is we own pharmacies. So we own three today with six at the definitive stage, so call it nine, and we will continue to educate patients and provide them with great assortments. So there's a lot of great activities, but really coming back to the brands, I know and we all know we're consumers, we love brands. And so the biggest thing with cannabis, I can tell you right now, is there's very low brand equity amongst long brands. Like, let's give it, you know, with the exception of the cookies of the world, do you know what I mean? But if you go into an international dispensary, you're going to have five brands on the shelf. What are you going to pick? Is it popcorn bud? Is it too dry? You have no quality expectations. And that's why the relationship with Snoop Dogg is people know he would not put his brand on something he would not smoke himself, truthfully. And so that was an expectation that we had and we committed to. And the price value relationship we'll bring to the market will be great. And I'm very confident consumers will love the wide assortment in all categories we're in. So very excited about that.
And, you know, just a quick follow up. It seems like you're doubling down on celebrity brands. I am familiar and a big fan, actually, of one of your celebrity brands, Coast Drops, right? You launched that with King of the Dot. Am I correct with Travis?
Yeah, so we have, we partnered with Ghost Drops on the Atlas Grower side previously to the global brand side. But yes, we have a relationship with them as well. And they've done a nice job with their brand too.
Fantastic. So let's do a quick rapid fire, if you don't mind, of these international markets. I'm really interested because you're hitting some key markets here. Australia, of course, you know, it's growing. I think the potential is there. We're seeing a lot of export happening from the Canadian side to that market. Germany, of course, you know, it's key for Europe. Not going to be what everybody wants it to be. Israel seems to be, you know, coming back as something, as more of a focus in the international cannabis community. I'm just curious to you, how do you differentiate the strategies here? What markets are you focusing on that are exciting you? You know, is there a market that maybe is less exciting? You know, I'd love to hear from your standpoint, since you're in so many key markets, a little bit of compare contrast.
Absolutely. So, I mean, yes, we're globally in all the international markets, but exactly to your point, the patients, the needs, the regulations are very, very different. So let me give you some perspective. Australia, a very, very important market for us. But what's very different in that medical cannabis space is as follows. Is, you know, when we know about traditional medical patients, what happens? You get your script from your doctor, you go to the dispensary, and you get to choose the variety you want. In Australia, very, very different. What happens there is the strains are actually registered, and the doctor prescribes strain-specific offerings. So you don't get to pick. Whoa. So the importance of predictability and having a supply chain in our brands like Cold Creek Kush are out there. When the doctor writes Cold Creek Kush and the patient goes to the pharmacist, let's say that wasn't available. There's no substitute or trading. So that's a very different contrast to what we're used to as a medical dispensary model, right, compared to the US or Canada. So that predictability and consistency in Australia is very important. Number two, in Australia, it's going to a GMP model after July, whereas traditionally GACP it has been the process of growing. So that has really changed the way a lot of licensed producers, as well as other MSOs, are looking to build an infrastructure out there and partnering with Atlas Global Brands, because we have an EU GMP hub for drying, which really helps.
Yeah, it's super expensive and hard to get.
Well, funny enough, you know, we've all been in the industry for long enough. Everyone talks about EU GMP. The irony is there's less than a half dozen in Canada that actually still do it, because people didn't finish it, to your point. There was COVID and everything like that that just slowed down the process, and people changed their strategy. So that's been a key differentiator for us. So that's Australia. You know, Israel, a very, very important market for us there as well. We've got, you know, our chairman's out there, as well as our advisory board. We've got boots on the ground there that really understand the regulatory body and the relationships there. And we take a three-pronged approach. So we export our product that we grow from our Stratford facility, which is a vertical indoor grow with phenomenal genetics and a nursery program to really pheno hunt.
So that is Canada to Israel, right?
Correct. So if you think Canada to Israel, right, then from Israel, we have multiple prongs there to be able to, you know, distribute to all of the pharmacies. There's roughly a 300 plus pharmacy model, so pharmacies that can sell cannabis. And then we own 9 of them. So again, we have to wear very different hats and be able to, you know, cater to the share of market on that side. So we expect to continue to export. We've announced publicly as well. So Snoop Dogg will be launching, you know, some limited time offer strains in Israel as well. So you can see our global platform and exclusivity with Snoop. And that's a good example of, you know, very low brand equity of brands locally. There's going to be high trial with Snoop, right? Everyone's waiting to try Snoop. And that's why the importance of bag appeal, you know, I call it the five senses. Like when I talk internally of, you know, it's a product first category. There's a smell, there's a taste, there's a touch, you know, et cetera. That's key, because let's all face it, celebrity brands in globally, it doesn't even matter what category outside of cannabis, is usually you can utilize it as an entry point to a brand. Cannabis, product first. You can put whoever you want on the label, but if you disappoint the bag, you've lost your consumer. So that's the level of thoughtfulness we take around our strategy and the insights we utilize to make sure we're building our brands and winning market share. And with the rest of the markets, you know, you're asking with, you know, Germany, obviously, you know, there's a lot of stability testing and making sure the products are sustainable on that front. So that's a slow build as people get in. But we have all of the pieces in place. And when you say compare and contrast, each market, it starts with the patient or the consumer, and you need to work backwards and really understand the regulations to make sure that we are catering to them. We've got differentiation and a production process and efficiency process to stay competitive with pricing in the market.
That's awesome. I want to understand the pharmacy model, right? Because Like, is it just a decision that you make to increase availability, or are they really profitable, right? Like, for instance, when I go to Colombia, I see that some companies tell me, you know, my clinics and my pharmacies are the most profitable side of my business. How does that work on your case? Why do you get into pharmacies, and what are the economics of it?
Yeah, so with the pharmacy side, the reason why we got into it was the fact that when you think about vertical integration in some of the US states, in Israel, there is a lack of quality in the product. So what we wanted to do with our pharmacy is as follows, is number one, be able to bring in exclusive and limited time offer drops into the market to be able to drive traffic and loyalty with the patients. That's the first thing. And then number two is to be able to really have a foothold of the market in key geographical areas, because the range of medical dispensaries in Israel are very contrasting. So let me give you an example. There could be a very small pharmacy that literally has drawers and you can buy it and get your product there, versus there are some pharmacies that look like rec stores, but essentially you need your script and you can see that. So our gold standard is to be able to create a shopping experience and an education platform there that's meaningful. On the economic side, you know, let's walk through some basic math. You know, we ship in a gram as an example for $2.50. Okay. Then from there, you can easily get to the distributor side of things and get it at, you know, call it, they buy it at around $6 to $7, depending on the grade. And then in the pharmacy side as well, you're getting around $10 still per gram in the marketplace. So is there going to be price compression in the future? Let's face it. The answer is yes. It's happening in every single market. We're not naive about that. But what we are focused on is, let's have, you know, a consistent supply chain. Let's have a consistent supply of high quality variety and a great category assortment based on pricing and consumer segmentation. And let's build the loyalty of our chains, where we're going to have, you know, there's lots of stuff, as we know, with retail. Do you keep different chains? Do you tier them based on segments of value, premium, etc.? There's a lot of those things we're looking at as we shape that through. But we want to be the leader there, because in those international markets, we do take for granted being in North America, but they don't have consistency of great product. Like, they still get the, when I came into the industry in, 2017, since legalization, they get the stuff where you shake it out and it's like, what part of the plant did this come from? Right. And so I laugh at that, because we're taking a different approach, whereas we're shipping all the best product out there, whereas others, I would say, have sent mediocre product at best just to try to clear their vaults and generate revenue. So we're taking a very different approach.
Interesting. I think I saw in, maybe it was New Cannabis Ventures article on the Canadian increase in sales April over March, that the price compression actually drove more consumers back to the legal market from the illicit market because prices were competitive. Very interesting there. So last thing for me, man, I'd love to hear, are you positioning any of these brands for a potential entrance into the US? I mean, is the Snoop Dogg brand for that? I know it's moot right now. It's not something that you're probably even planning about, but I'm curious, are you keeping an eye on the US market as all these potential legislative bills and actions move forward?
Yeah, we're definitely keeping an eye on the market. I mean, with Snoop Dogg, we have the global exclusivity with the exclusion of the US. So we're not part of that arrangement with the US. But I'll be honest with you, there are a lot of great players in the US. And there's a lot of vertical integration happening there. I'm just, truthfully, I just love the industry as a whole. So I always keep track of things in general, but our focus is international outside of the US. There's plenty of players there that can do it. We know the regulations that are happening today. So when we think of, you know, the Australia market, the Israel market, the Germany market, you know, there's plenty of space and share for us to be able to generate a sustainable and profitable business out there. And, you know, we'll probably be outside looking in, but definitely that's not part of the plans today.
Awesome, man. Bernie Young, CEO, Atlas Global Brands. Really insightful interview, my friend. Really appreciate you being here with us. Ideally, we'll see you in Chicago as well. We'll continue this conversation in the future. Bernie, thank you so much.
Yeah, we'll see you there. I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, cheers, sir. Have a good one.
He's like on the DL, just bring Snoop.
Yeah, bring Snoop. Bring him with you. Sorry, I coughed. that was good, man. That was a fun podcast, fun episode. Two great leaders in the industry doing not completely different things, but working on different sides of it. Any thoughts, man, before we hop off here?
Very cool. Super informative. New topics. I like, you know, when we explore these different topics. By the way, go follow me on Twitter at Javier Casa. I'm posting every day.
Both of our Twitter handles are right there. Don't just follow him. If you follow him without following me, we're not friends anymore.
Oh, you can follow Elliot if you want.
Thank you for your permission, Javi.
He'll retweet my stuff.
I do. I retweet your stuff all the time. Elliot Lane 10, because there were 9 other Elliot Lanes on Twitter when I got on
there.
It's
okay. You got Messi's number. Are we? Let's talk about that for a second before we end the show. Lionel Messi, the best soccer player in the world, just is announced a few days ago he is going to play in Miami for the Inter Miami.
I'm so sorry for your loss.
A special BZ Cannabis outing to watch Lionel Messi play next year in Miami.
I would have thought that you would have been like totally against that you would have been so hurt emotionally.
100% for it. Oh damn, I was about to do the plug. BZCannabis.com. Come join us in Chicago September 27 and 28 for the best business and investment cannabis company conference in the world. This is
in the world.
One-on-one meetings. Come raise capital. Come meet your next partner, your next customer. This is honestly just awesome. BZCannabis.com. The tickets will never be cheaper than they are right now.
Exactly. You heard it here at bzcannabis.com. We'll see you guys there. We'll see you again on Tuesday for the next episode of Cannabis Insider. Until then, have a great weekend. Peace.